Today's Issues continues on AFR with your host, Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. We can talk more about this later, but my guess is, by the way, let me reintroduce our panel here, Walker Wildman, Steve Jordahl. All right, I cut the computer on again without turning the sound down. Now, I did it. And Dr. Ray Pritchard raised with us. He hosts on Tuesdays and Thursdays from Kansas City, Kansas. But what I was going to say was, if you're in the office of Speaker of the House in Washington, Nancy Pelosi, that's who the Speaker of the House is, who, as far as I know, does not identify herself as an American Indian. But she
does identify herself as Catholic, which is questionable.
Right. She goes to a Catholic church. So anyway, my point is she probably gets up every morning not wondering what President Trump said, but wondering what Alexandria
Ocasio-Cortez
is, right. because Cortez, the newbie congresswoman, who's not even old enough to be eligible to run for president, but yet she is throwing these ideas out every day, these far, far, far left ideas out, and then Nancy Pelosi's having to say, no, we're not going that far, which her base, that is the Democrats' base, wants her to keep going that far. So it's a little sideshow there,
yeah.
In Washington, within the Democrat Party. Well, one of the things that the president talked about on Tuesday was the need to, respect human life, and talked about the unborn being a part of that. And so various states around the country have passed pro-life bills, and sadly, some have passed pro-abortion bills. We saw that in New York. Mm-hmm. But one of the leading pro-life states in the country is our home state here of Mississippi. Iowa would be right there with us, and maybe some other states, but I know Mississippi and Iowa have sort of led the way on this issue. And we have with us, there's another bill in the legislature of the state of Mississippi, which is also very pro-life. And joining us to talk about it is Lieutenant Governor Tate Reeves. Lieutenant Governor, thanks for being on with us.
Thank you for having me today. It's always great to be on your radio show.
Now you're running for governor too, right?
I am. We're in the middle of the legislative session. We're about 30 days in, and we do have a governor's race in Mississippi this year. And so November of 2019, Mississippi, Kentucky, and Louisiana are the only three states that have governor's races, but we'll be on the ballot in November 2019.
Now, for those who don't know, what is the role of the lieutenant governor in the state of Mississippi?
The lieutenant governor in Mississippi is a position, it's considered both legislative and executive, but the primary function of lieutenant governor is legislative. So the lieutenant governor of Mississippi actually appoints all committee chairmen. The lieutenant governor of Mississippi appoints all members of each committee, as well as assigns each and every bill to the committee of his or her choice. And so it's primarily legislative in function.
Okay. Now, talk about this heartbeat bill that is in the – is that in the House or the Senate, or is it ready to go forward to the governor's desk? Where is it right now?
Well, the answer to your question is yes. So we have a heartbeat bill in the Senate that we have passed out of committee. This past Tuesday was our deadline. The House of Representatives has a similar bill that they have passed out of committee as well. Speaker Philip Gunn in the House and I have worked very, very closely on a large number of pieces of pro-life legislation over the last 7 years. We've passed an admitting privileges bill. Last year we passed a 15-week banning abortions, anything after 15 weeks. And this year we are saying with the heartbeat bill that we are putting on paper, and hopefully we'll get it passed the Senate and the House. If the Democrats don't try to stop us, we will be successful in getting that done, in defining life beginning at conception, and any time a heartbeat is detected, that there could no longer be an abortion.
Who could be against that? Who could be against that? Mm. Right?
That is a great question. You know, the fact of the matter is, when you look at what's happening in states like New York, when you see what the governor of Virginia said just last week, mm-hmm. The far left has taken over the Democrat Party on a lot of issues, but certainly on issues of life. If a heartbeat is detected, life has begun, and anything to abort that child is murder and nothing else. Mm.
Talking to Lieutenant Governor Tate Reeves of Mississippi, there is in the legislature in Jackson a heartbeat bill. And what are you asking people who are listening to us, obviously who live in the state of Mississippi, to do to advance this?
Well, we need pro-life Mississippians, we need pro-life Americans to stand up for unborn children. We need them to contact their member of the House of Representatives, contact your senator, and it doesn't matter if they're a Republican or a Democrat. I think that if you call your Republican or your Democrat House member or senator and say, hey, I am for protecting the unborn children, and I hope you will be too, you can have a real impact on whether or not this bill gets to the governor's desk for a signature.
Lieutenant Governor Reeves, this is Steve Jordahl from American Family News. About 10 years ago when these bills started popping up, the debate within the pro-life community was, can they survive a court challenge? And they didn't think it could, most people, and they thought that it was just too far of a reach. We now have a revamped Supreme Court in most cases. Are you thinking that this is a bill that can withstand court challenge?
Well, I tell you, and we've had those conversations in the Mississippi Capitol in each of the last 7 years. To be perfectly honest with you, the reason that the election of President Trump was so important, and there are a number of reasons, but one of the primary ones is the potential of him having the ability to appoint Supreme Court justices. Obviously, with Brett Kavanaugh, most recently. We have seen the type of justices that the president will support, will appoint, and with the aging of several members of the court, it is very possible within the next year or certainly within the next 5 years that he will have the ability to make additional appointments. And reality is, whether it's this bill or it's a bill that is proposed by the other side, like the bill in New York, like the bill in Virginia, which in essence says that babies can be born and then, quote unquote, aborted. I think that there will be an additional bill that gets to the United States Supreme Court at some point in the near future. And the whole premise behind Roe v. Wade and it being a constitutional right to abort babies needs to be reevaluated and needs to be tested.
Lieutenant Governor Tate Reeves, Mississippi, joining us, and from Jackson, the legislature there is in session, and the heartbeat bill is before the legislature, and that's what we've been discussing. Thank you, Lieutenant Governor Reeves, for being on with us. We appreciate it very much, and your stand for the unborn.
Thank you so much. Always good to talk to y'all. Look forward to seeing you soon.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
That was... He is also running for governor, that's in the fall. Lieutenant Governor Reeves has consistently been pro-life over the years, so this isn't a something that he's decided to do because there's an election in the fall.
Right, no, absolutely.
And he said contact your House member, and if you live in the Magnolia State in Jackson, call your House or Senate member and let them hear from you that you're in favor of the heartbeat bill. You're listening to the radio program Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. I'm Tim with Walker and Steve and Ray. Next story.
Well, I wanted to bring you some more details from the National Prayer Breakfast this morning that the president attended. Along with the president, we had House Speaker Nancy Pelosi was there. So was Vice President Pence and his wife Karen. The Reverend Michael Curry, who was the one who made headlines last year with his stirring sermon about the power of love at the wedding of Prince Harry and Meghan Markle, and other leaders. He was the one that made a very powerful or just oft-quoted speech at the royal wedding between Prince Harry and Meghan Markle.
Okay. I didn't see that. So he's a pastor from America?
No, he's British.
Oh, he's British.
Yeah.
Okay.
But he was at the prayer breakfast this morning.
Gotcha.
I'll play a little bit. You already played the one. The very first words, and I won't play this again, but the very first words out of his mouth before he said, thank you for having me, it was the ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States, clap, 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 clap. And the very first words out of his mouth was, I will never let you down. I thought that was striking. It was not even, I mean, just right off the bat, the very first thing he wanted to let the people of faith in that room know.
How did Nancy Pelosi react to that?
Well, I don't think she stood and clapped. I don't know. I wasn't watching it. I was listening.
You got some audio, you say?
I do, yeah. So let me just play. This is one of the things he said where he's promising to stand strong for religious freedom. This is cut 7, Brent.
As president, I will always cherish, honor, and protect the believers who uplift our communities and sustain our nation. To ensure that people of faith can always contribute to our society, my administration has taken historic action to protect religious liberty.
There it is. He had one other cut that, go ahead.
No, go ahead, Ray. Well, I wanted Ray to comment on that. Go ahead, Ray.
Well, we have not had a president in our lifetime who is as bold and as consistent as President Trump. And that's really something, Steve. His first words are, I will never let you down.
Right,
we are so used to being, let's face it, lied to by politicians. Mm-hmm. You get the feeling that when he says that, he really means it. That's a very encouraging statement from the president.
Amen.
The one other thing that people are going to be talking about, we'll let you listen to it here. He did a little misspeak. He was talking about the role of faith and religious people in our history. And he meant to say that the people behind faith, the people of faith were behind the abolition of slavery and that they were behind the civil rights movement. Well, he kind of conflated the two and it came out as he's in favor that the people of faith were behind the abolition of civil rights. That's being pounced upon by some, but it's just a misspeak. I'll let you hear it here and let you guys comment on it. This has got 6.
Since the founding of our nation, many of our greatest strides, from gaining our independence to abolition of civil rights to extending the vote for women, have been led by people of faith and started in prayer. When we open our hearts to faith, we fill our hearts with love.
So that was the misspeak.
Yeah, that sounded almost like a teleprompter mishap, the way he was reading it, and then he kind of slowed down because he knew it didn't sound right.
Yeah.
But it happens.
It does.
Dozens of speeches every year. And
so everybody knows he does not believe that people of faith were for the abolition of civil rights.
I don't know. Right. Democrats might jump on that one.
They have.
They might.
They are. Yeah. He was, what do they call it, signaling?
Mm-hmm. Virtue signaling. Yeah,
no. I hate it forever. Whoever mistyped that.
You think it was
that's
a miss?
Just a little glitch.
It almost sounded. It sounded like as if it was a typo in the teleprompter.
I tell you what's amazing to me, and this is that someone can keep up the stamina.
Yeah.
That President Trump.
Mm-hmm.
And it's every day. Now, any schedule of a president, Ray, is intense, for the full 4 years. Now, granted, you do have a lot of luxuries. You have people who wait on you hand and foot. And, if you want to take an hour break, you can do it because you're the boss. But at the same time, the demands on you daily and your schedule and always having to be on your A game I would think would be, almost exhausting sometimes. So here you have a man 72 years old.
Right, right.
Ray, and he just gets up every morning at 4, tweets about Nancy Pelosi, and, keeps going until he has the Big Mac at noon, and then...
Right. Huh? Big Mac and a Diet Coke, right? So it all...
the Breakfast of Champions or...
Right, right.
Whatever. But don't you find that... So occasionally you're going to misspeak is my point.
Right. Well, look, in this as in so many other ways, President Trump breaks the mold completely.
Right.
I mean, you get the feeling he goes to bed at 11:30 and gets up at 2:30 or something like that. He operates with very little sleep. He's tweeting day and night. He's going. Look, the for anybody, whether it's George Bush or Bill Clinton or Barack Obama, all who are much younger than right. Mr. Trump, the pressures are enormous. So, you know, this was a little glitch. This was a little misstatement. Probably, Walker, what you said, somebody mistyped it. And it didn't,
it didn't
show up
like
until
he said, I am a Asian American.
Right.
Right?
Right, right, right. He didn't say that, right?
Right. Or something, you know, where you just have right. to do something like crazy, like say you're a different ethnicity than everybody knows that you are.
Mm-hmm. It was funny yesterday when we were talking to, remember the story came out yesterday about the president and his downtimers, executive time in the Oval Office, and how people thought that he was just sitting around for large swaths of time just watching TV and reading the paper, despite the fact that so many things are getting done in this economy. Sarah Sanders pointed out on Fox and Friends that during the campaign, he was, when he was on his sixth or seventh rally of the day and going full burn strong, these young reporters from Axios and all these millennial reporters were slogging down the energy drinks, doing everything they could just to right. try to keep up with the man. They can't. No one can keep up with this guy.
Next story.
Well, it's amazing. Maybe he would be one who would be ready for the new fitness test for the Army. We are seeing that the Army, which has had fitness tests for a while, which has been basically if you can do two minutes of sit-ups, 2 minutes of push-ups, and a two-mile run, you pass. Well, the people in the field are finding that that's not quite bringing them people that are combat ready as far as fitness. So they have designed, they are designing a more grueling and complex fitness exam. It will add deadlifts, power throws, and other exercises designed to make soldiers more fit and ready for combat. And there will be no sliding on a scale for older men or women or anybody. Anybody who wants to be in combat is going to have to go through these new fitness regimes.
Yeah, I think this is great because, you know, for the past several years, 8 to 10 years, we've seen the decline in fitness standards in the military. One of the concerns is they wanted to make sure enough women qualify for the military, so they adjust the standards for women, but not just women, men who are unhealthy or out of shape, they adjust it for them too, so they can all, you know, kind of an all-inclusive type standard. But this is great to see under President Trump's military because we need the best and most fit commanders on the field because after all, in some situations, when you're in combat, being physically fit is an absolute necessity.
And in fact, this is what was interesting. Some of the things that they're making them do are mimicking what they're going to see in the field. For example, scientific research shows that the exercises they need soldiers to use have to do with sprinting away from a fire, for example, or carrying a wounded comrade on a stretcher, or hauling cans of fuel to a truck. These are lifting and throwing and carrying
practical
exercises that you don't get if you're just doing push-ups and runs.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to test them on these things to make sure if they're actually going to qualify for the duties that they have out there.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Let's talk about, you mentioned the new Green Deal for Ocasio-Cortez.
I didn't mention it. You mentioned it.
Well, I know I heard you talking about it at the end of the last break. I wanted to bring up a little bit some of the things that we're starting to see details now of some of the things that they are asking for that they're going to want. This Medicaid for All, to the tune of trillions of dollars, they're still not sure how they're going to pay for it. But the government, the Democrats who are pushing it, still don't know.
Wait a minute, just a minute. I thought that this, Ray, this is where there's a division in the Democrat ranks, I think.
Right.
Cortez, I'm just going to have to go with the three letters of her name.
AOC.
Right.
Okay, AOC. Does everybody know who we're talking about
yes.
here? AOC.
Right.
AOC. She, Representative AOC from New York, went out with this health care for
Green
everybody.
Green New Deal, yes.
Yeah, but before that, the health care for everybody,
right.
I think. And Nancy Pelosi, the Speaker of the House, fellow Democrat, has told insurance companies like Blue Cross Blue Shield, no, we're not going to do that. So, Ray, again, this is AOC versus Nancy Pelosi and the establishment Democrats.
Okay, I'm putting my money on Pelosi on this one. Right?
Okay.
She can hold up to Trump. She can hold up to AOC. Yeah.
That's exactly right.
There's eight bullet points. I won't read them all, but a couple of them of this new bill that they're putting forward. They want a job with a family-sustaining wage, family medical leave, vacations, retirement security for everybody. They want healthy food. They want safe, affordable, and adequate housing. And they want economic security for all who are unable or unwilling to work.
Here's the difference.
Unwilling.
What? Unwilling to work.
Economic security for those who are unwilling to work.
Here's the difference. Beyond that last one, which is unexplainable, everybody, I don't know one American that doesn't want people to have good health care, good health insurance, a good paying job. I mean, who goes out and campaigns on taking away health care from people? Nobody does that. So, but there's a difference. The difference is conservatives want the free market to an individual responsibility, individual hard work, to allow people to prosper based on the merits, based on how hard they work and their education and things like that. But the Democrats want to totally wipe out the free market system that has made America thrive, and they want to replace it with government-controlled redistribution of wealth, which will actually long-term wipe out the wealth in the U.S.
Well, just to end things here today, let me bring you the Georgetown University, which is actually redistributing the wealth. The college has decided to vote. They're going to put it before the students, but it is on the ballot whether or not they're going to collect a $27.20 student tax for reparations to the families and descendants of slaves sold by the university in the late 1830s. So they're going to be collecting $27.20 per student per semester for a reparations fund. And so they're paying back the sins of their great-great-great-grandfathers. They're charging the students now for that.
And what are they going to do with that money?
Well, they're going to put it to special considerations is going to be given to causes and proposals directly benefiting those descendants still residing in proud and unprivileged communities. So they're going to put it to the black communities. Now, these students of color will also have to pay this if they're attending Georgetown. But the only people to be exempted are people who are on scholarships. So students receiving financial aid from the university would not have to pay for
the fee. And we wonder why we're having a hard time moving on as a country.
And college and college debt.
We're rehashing the sins adds to the college of three, four, or five generations ago for people who have no idea what great, 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 great grandfather did.
A lot of this PC stuff, it's beyond PC stuff, like you just described. The average person out there in the country, black, white, brown, or otherwise, doesn't care about this stuff.
They just want to move on.
They don't care about it's just most people have common sense to know that something a man did 40 years ago or didn't do is accused of, and I'm just using a broad general scenario here, our example, does not define who he is today.
Right.
And if you're going to, again, I am admitting there are things that you do, where there are degrees of things you do as a youth that, you know, count, you know, you have to, but generally speaking, people go, come on. I don't want to be held to, is that the standard we're going to go by for everybody? We might as well disqualify 3/4 of Americans for any kind of public service. If you know what I'm saying? Right. It's just ridiculous. And I dare say most Democrats agree with what I'm saying.
Yes. Yeah. Hey, I want to make one note. The Breakpoint audio clip after the show here deals with sensitive topics. So if you have children, you may want to
coming up note. In just a minute.
That's right.
Okay. See you tomorrow, folks. Trivia Friday tomorrow.